WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
Outschool.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The past several days have been filled with observances of Martin Luther King's birthday. The civil rights leader never lived to see the great success the movement he spearheaded would achieve. Our society is integrated from the White House on down, but there is one area where it remains relatively segregated, and that is the area where Dr. King began his quest for equal rights for all Americans, in the church. In 1954, with his first pastorate at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, one of his first priorities was to diversify the congregation, believing that worship at its best should bring people together to realize their oneness and unity under God. But today, 58 years later, Sunday morning is among the most segregated times of the week. However, there are area pastors working to change that. Among them, our guests this hour. Howard Brown is senior pastor of Christ Central Presbyterian Church. He joins us in our Spirit Square studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Naeem Faisal is a former Muslim who grew up in the deserts. Well, actually grew up in Pakistan and then moved to the deserts of Kuwait and founded Charlotte's Mosaic Church in 2006. Thank you for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
And Dr. Gerard Amarty is the L. Richardson King Associate Professor of Sociology at Davidson College and author of three books, among them a Mosaic of Believers, Diversity and Innovation in a Multi-Ethnic Church, and his latest, Workshop Across the Racial Divide, Religious Music and the Multiracial Congregation. Thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
Given that Dr. King started with this goal of integrating the church, how much or how little have things changed since that goal came into being?
Well, not much. I don't want to overestimate how difficult this is, but racial segregation is very real, and it is not only real in our churches, it continues to be real in our neighborhoods, in our workplaces, and even in our schools. But the church becomes a particular place because the church where we treasure the notion of love and hospitality and care. And there are church leaders who are very distressed that the place where we would want to see the most evidence of love and acceptance would be the place where we would still see discrimination and stigma.
Is the lack of integration in these churches an evidence? Is it evidence that there is not love and respect, or is it something else at work?
You know, there's a lot going on in terms of understanding how churches are segregated, but churches are voluntary in the United States. You can go to any church you want. And when people get a chance to choose wherever they want to go, it seems that overall they tend to prefer to be with people who are their own race or their own ethnicity.
Now, we have with us today two pastors of churches that are not mainstream churches. They are not Myers Park Presbyterian or some of the other mainline churches around town. And we have a pastor who is an African American, and we have a pastor here who is from the Middle East. Both Christian churches. And you've made an attempt, and we'll get into how successful you've been, at making sure that your congregations are, in fact, integrated. Is that because this is kind of like politics? You're neither Republicans nor Democrats. You're pulling everything from the independent field of people out there. Is that why you're successful at this?
I would say that it's a matter of being politically anonymous for us, if I can put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I say that we at Christ Central, we have right-wingers and left-wingers, if you will.
Perhaps using politics is not mm-hmm. a good example, but in the presidential race, for instance, mm-hmm. the Republicans have to pull from the center coalition to mm-hmm. get enough votes to beat Barack Obama. The same is true of Obama mm-hmm. and the Democratic Party. In other words, the independents, the people in the middle, are the people that are going to help push one side or the other over the edge. So you can't go for the real dyed-in-the-wool mainline religious conservatives. You have to go with people who are searching. Correct?
I would say that with my experience, it's been that, I think everybody loves the idea of diversity, mm-hmm. But only, I would say, there are levels to that. You tolerate it one level, you appreciate it in another level. And I think there are certain people that appreciate diversity, but then to be actually involved in it is a whole new level, if you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if there are certain kinds of people, like either left or right, that are prone to not just appreciating it but wanting to live it. I think they're just people who are comfortable with being different. They appreciate it. They live it. I think it has a lot to do with where you were born and raised, too. I mean, if you're used to different nationalities, if you're used to a different culture, if you're used to operating and adapting to different environments, you're just going to be prone to diversity. In fact, I would think you would even think that is the norm.
Hmm.
But I think, unfortunately, what you have here in Charlotte, North Carolina, is you have a lot of people that live and are used to the Western way of doing things. They're used to certain things. And so I think intuitively, without even thinking, people just are prone to the comfortable, what mm-hmm. they're used to. So I think churches, if you're not intentional, you're not going to be diverse because people are just used to what they're used to.
I interrupted you, so let me get your take on this, Reverend.
Yeah, I think that what's happened, if you listen to the stories of people at Christ Central, mm-hmm. is each one of those stories is marked by some experience they've had in their lives. Whether it's having a friend who is different than they were, or growing up in a neighborhood where they had to kind of step outside of their cultures in some way, or experience another culture in a way, you know, intimate relationships with a friend or something like that, a college roommate, those sorts of things have caused people to look for groups that they can talk about those experiences and explore those experiences mm-hmm. and grow in those experiences. So we have a lot of people who have stories of diversity that precede them becoming a part of Christ Central Church.
Naeem Fazal mentioned that people in Charlotte are not necessarily used to this diverse style of worship, and then he kind of broadened it out to the West not being used to this. This is not just a Charlotte issue. This is an issue throughout the country, is it not?
That's right.
Is it an issue throughout the world or throughout Western Christianity?
Sure. I mean, we have, at least in the United States, over 300,000 congregations. Of those, maybe 5% have some level of diversity, at least 20% of the congregation being a different race or ethnicity. And so the great majority of church-going experience is being with your own people. And we think that in the United States that we have a care about diversity and difference, and even in terms of what Naeem and Howard are bringing up, there seem to be suggesting that people have diverse experiences outside of church and then are looking for churches that support their values and their desires for diversity. We see that in couples that are mixed ethnically or racially, looking for churches where they can both feel comfortable or at home. But I think that raises the issue. Are churches places where diversity happens and is stimulated, or is a church that accommodates people who already care about diversity? And those are the questions.
When we talk about diversity, are we talking about black versus white, or are we talking about white, blacks, Hispanics, Asians?
Right. In my own research, we've looked at all Middle of those Eastern things, and we've got Middle Eastern here, yeah. But I think that the issue of diversity here is difference. What do you define as different? And different places define difference in different ways.
Well, let's talk about one of the key differences that seems to be a stumbling block. Let's be honest here. Black churches have been characterized as having more passionate, if I can use that word, worship services. They're more into it. They're more vocal. They're more alive, whereas white churches tend to be more reserved, more buttoned down, more sit your little fanny in the pew and
right, Mike, I want to chime in on, because this new book that I've written on worship is something that really ties into that. These actually are very old notions that we have from the turn of the century.
Not true anymore?
That are exaggerated expressions about blacks being more passionate and emotional, and whites are more sedate and kind of dull and boring. And so that translates today into blacks wanting to raise their hands and have tambourines or soulful music versus whites who want acoustic guitars and old hymns. And I think that this sort of notion, I think that there are a lot of people who believe that. But when I talk to people who are a part of the broader scope of the black church or professors who do work in black congregations, what they point out is variety, and that we can't automatically do that. In addition to whites who are a part of passionate Pentecostal or charismatic congregations who are quite exuberant in their worship. So I think we want to be careful not to essentialize on race in terms of what kind of degree of emotionality is in worship.
But isn't it more than simply wanting to be with people like yourself on Sunday morning who share your values, who share your background, who share your experiences? It's also the for lack of a better term, the show you've grown up with. It's a different show, isn't it?
I think so, in the sense that you're worshiping in large part because of your cultural experience. And you're coming together with united issues that you're asking your Lord to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's easier to express your emotions in worship, and even have what's being preached across the pulpit reach you when you're coming from a united need as a people.
Hmm.
And when we talk about the African-American church and it being more emotional, the African-American church experience is incredibly diverse. I grew up in an AME church, and my father was a music director. And he was classically trained. We were all classically trained. He played in the symphony, Charleston Symphony Orchestra, involved in operas and those sorts of things. And so in that church, we had a pipe organ.
Mm-hmm.
And we, sang the hymns fairly straight. And then there's a gospel choir. So we had an experience of everything. I just think it's a lot more fun. It's easier to stereotype the worship situation among African Americans, but I think we have a very diverse worship experience. At Christ Central, I like to say our worship, nobody is going to like it. We take what we've done.
That seems counterintuitive to me.
Yeah. No one's going to necessarily like it, but they're going to learn to love it.
Why are they not going to like it?
Because they're not going to get everything they want.
Mm. Because they're getting things that they don't want?
They're not getting just their own cultural experience or desires of their cultural experience. We're mixing the experience. We're mixing the sound up a little bit, where it may be a little too loud for one group, or a little too soft for another group, a little too long for this group, or a little too short for that group.
You know, I've been in broadcasting for a long time, and that's a recipe for disaster in broadcasting.
It is definitely a disaster.
But
it is a risky disaster.
But I'll tell you, the
research bears out. But we can keep it clean. If we keep it clean and just make it easy for everybody, then we continue to be segregated if we want.
Have you found that people give? I don't like that loud piece of music, but this is nice. Or, this is kind of sedate, but I did like that piece you did last week. Do you find that they come back because they're willing to compromise? Compromise is a dirty word in today's culture. So are they willing to make exceptions for things they don't like because there are things that they do?
Yes.
Yeah, I would completely agree with Howard. I've talked to over 100, almost 200 people from pulpit to pew in churches of all sorts, all characterized by diversity. And what I find is that people learn to worship in their churches.
We have to take a break. We'll come back. That's interesting. Learn to worship. We'll come back and talk about this in a second with our three guests. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
And you're listening to Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE, listener-supported public radio. Where support today comes from WFAE members and Heartwood Tree Service, protecting the strength and beauty of bare trees in winter through research-based structural pruning. Tree guidance available at 704-525-3066 or online at heartwoodtree.com. And McGay Shepherd, certified financial planner and senior vice president of investments at Stifel Nicolaus with 25 years experience. Stifel is a national brokerage firm providing investment services since 1890. Stifel.com. Sunny today in Charlotte, a high around 55 degrees tonight, clear skies with a low in the upper 20s. And for tomorrow, more sunshine, beautiful day, cooler with the highs near 40. It's currently 38 degrees in Charlotte.
On the next Diane Rehm Show. In 1862, Abraham Lincoln presided over a country whose survival was in doubt. What leaders in today's polarized America could learn from our 16th president.
Tune in for the Diane Rehm Show this morning at 10 here on 90.7 WFAE.
Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about integrating Sunday morning with two pastors and a professor of sociology. Howard Brown is senior pastor at Christ Central Presbyterian. Naeem Faisal is a pastor and founder of Mosaic Church. And Dr. Gerardo Marti is associate professor of sociology at Davidson College, who's made this a point of his research, this Sunday morning phenomenon. You said something just before the break about people learn to worship in their churches. Having grown up Catholic, that is absolutely true, maybe more so for a Catholic of my generation than Catholics today, because the service, the Mass, has changed substantially mm-hmm. over the years since That's it right. was in Latin, mm-hmm. which I do remember. But mm-hmm. it was very hard to break that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Resented it, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
What is this English?
Mm.
That's not God. Mm. So. Talk about learning to worship.
Well, I was
can you change your patterns?
Absolutely. I was surprised because so many people believe that you have to have the right kind of music in order to bring in people. And even more so that if you're going to have particular people from particular racial or ethnic backgrounds, you have to have particular kind of music. So if you're going to have Latinos, you've got to have salsa.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have blacks come, you've got to have gospel. Mm-hmm. If you're going to bring some whites, I guess you've got to bring in some Led Zeppelin or some Kieran Carpenter. I don't know, something like that. But whatever it is, there is a belief that particular kinds of music is going to resonate with particular kinds of people. And what I found is that people come to their churches because of friends and family, and they learn to worship in the church that they go to. And over again, the stories that people tell me is that they learn to worship in their congregation. Mm. And I found that they had to really hate the music or have things so radically wrong for them in order for them to leave, because that is not the primary reason they come and is not the reason they stay. But they learn to accommodate by listening to the words, by being able to accommodate. If it's louder than where they came from, they learn to accommodate to that. If it's quieter, they learn to find worship in that quietness. But worship is not necessarily a function of what people like in terms of listening. One of the most interesting interviews I had, she said she liked jazz and pop music and things that she listened to on the radio. And I said, does your church have that? And she says, no, not at all. But she said, there's a difference between music that's for entertainment and music that's for worship. And people make a difference between what they listen to for leisure and what they listen to in terms of their own religious experience.
And yet in the break you were talking about how you take a hymnal that has no music, it just has the words, and mm-hmm. you fit the words
right.
to, what, popular songs? Or
we could use popular songs. We have a number of professional musicians who write the music themselves. Sometimes mm-hmm. we take riffs from some songs and, hey, that's a good sound. We have Spurgeon's hymn book a friend gave to me, mm-hmm. and in this particular collection of hymns that Spurgeon used in his church, there's no music. They're just words. And so we take the words and look at them and kind of get an idea of what they sound like or feel
mm-hmm.
or message, and we connect that with music. And
what kind of music?
Anything from soul to rock to gospel to jazz. We have some, I mean, it could be any kind of sound. But for the most part, we're soul and R&B and jazz.
But is it
and
just? But is it just the music that attracts diversity? Is it also the message or the style of the preaching, or is there something other than the music?
I think so. I think it's all about language and not just English language. Like, for example, I was, I speak four languages, and so coming to the U.S., learning English doesn't mean that you can actually communicate with people in the Western world. There's a lot of things that even American English, if you're going to communicate, you have to learn certain phrases. You've got to understand the culture, and I quickly realized that I had to learn I call it the language of people. And I think, for example, at Mosaic, we don't, you were talking about black or white or Hispanic. We have more of an international flair.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like we have flags of all the countries up or anything like that. It's just, it's my background. I grew up in a melting pot in Kuwait. And there are certain ways you can communicate certain things and people understand it. I think at church, there's a certain languages preachers, words that preachers use that I would say just divide people and segment people into groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are language that actually brings people together. And we try to do that Mosaic, and that's why people who like to be different and comfortable in their own group, I think they're going to be attracted to a certain kind of language. People who like to embrace and appreciate other people, I think they're attracted to a different kind of language.
Mm-hmm. You came from, you grew up in Pakistan. You came from Kuwait. I'm wrong about Pakistan?
I grew up in Kuwait.
Kuwait, okay. In churches, in Christian churches in Kuwait, it is a diverse population. It's not a problem. It's not even an issue, is it? I'm asking.
In Kuwait, Christian churches in
mm-hmm.
Kuwait,
mm-hmm.
I was a Muslim, so I never really visited. I came to the U.S. after the Gulf War in 90.
And converted, Iraq, and converted after coming to the
yes,
U.S.?
I came here in 92.
Okay. And the very name Mosaic Church
yes.
indicates what it's all about.
Right.
That's on purpose, I take
Correct.
It.
Correct.
It's not so apparent with Christ Central, although your location would indicate that it's diverse because you hold services in the Neighborhood Theater in Noda, correct?
Right. Christ Central mm-hmm. is also intentional to our mission because what we do is we're not trying to take people out of their social settings
mm-hmm.
and their cultural settings. We want them to continue to be who they are ethnically, socially, culturally. Our deal is this. We believe central to change in the society is the message of Jesus Christ. It is the message of the gospel that God has sent his son, Jesus Christ, in the world to save a diversity of sinners and a diversity of cultures in all kind of ways. And all kind of situations. And if we keep that message central in our songs and in our preaching and in our liturgy at church, we believe that change, that the church is the greatest change agent this country and the civil rights movement has ever known or could ever experience. And central to that isn't some social or, man-made thought.
But church, it seems to me, also is one of the great stasis creators, if that's the right term, because for years, churches mm-hmm. were at the forefront of keeping black churches and white churches separate during slavery, mm-hmm. during Jim Crow, mm-hmm. in the early days of the civil rights movement. Churches were bound, many churches, not all, mm-hmm. were bound and determined to keep things the way they were.
Right, but one of the dynamics that we're seeing today is exactly the conviction that Howard conveys,
mm-hmm.
that the power of my religious commitment and the unity that we find there mm-hmm. is able to overcome our racial divisions. But what we need to add is a middle ground. How does a person come from being separate, disconnected, that person's strange, I've never had a friend like you kind of an experience, to this being my best friend, someone that I really love and enjoy? And that middle ground actually comes from some sense of connection that we have to each other. And that's accomplished in different ways in different churches.
Well, I know that the mainline denominations are losing membership, and I guess the alternative ones are gaining membership. Is this partly why?
Not exactly. I think that there are a lot of bigger questions about accounting for attendance and membership, and everyone's on board with attempting to work through issues of diversity, mainline, evangelical, charismatic, Pentecostal. But what we find is, how are those connections being made?
Plus, whether you're in the black community or the white community, it would seem to me to be more difficult to diversify an older, and I don't mean age-wise, but a congregation that's been established for a long time.
Well,
that has a certain...
That's, again, a yes-no. The first book that I wrote was about a church that was established in 1937.
Okay.
And went through tremendous changes and was able to... diversify not only in the 1960s with Latinos and whites, but then into the 1990s with Asians and then an increasing number of African Americans. Churches have the capacity to reinvent themselves, and churches actually
Who spearheads that reinvention? Does it have to come from the top down, or does it come from the congregation up?
I think that there's a lot of ways to talk about this. It's partly leadership, but it's partly the dynamic of being relevant and missional in this world. Churches have a desire to be relevant to the world around them, and they continue to push that in a number of different ways. And so there is a way in which they want to be stable for their people, but there are a lot of ways in which there's a dynamism, innovation, and change that continues to happen as well. And so the staid out structures that we see in terms of the steeples hides a lot of the churning that goes on within these congregations. I think that's part of what's going on.
I think that for a congregation to an established congregation to change, or for people to get together to do this kind of integration, requires a large degree of loss of power and control.
For the congregation?
For the congregation and for the people who are in charge of that congregation.
But doesn't that make it then more difficult to transition to something like this, as opposed to starting a new church that welcomes from the get-go everybody?
What can make it easier to transition is that you begin to see your congregation, as Gerardo was saying, no longer being relevant, actually dying on the vine. And I think a lot of congregations have been motivated by that. Mm. I think it just takes a lot of work and sometimes a lot of deaths of people who are in charge.
Mm. Yeah, I think that the future leaders of churches are sitting in the chairs, you know. They're sitting in the pews. And so it's connected. Leadership and whoever's listening to leadership, it's all connected. It just matters, you know, generations just matter. But I will say this, I believe the future is obviously more diverse, but what I'm convinced about is that there is a population group which I call, it's like this new culture of mixed not being identified by their heritage group of people that are coming. You know, some psychologists would say, sociologists would say that the future is brown, you know, where you're going to see this in 30 years, just everybody's going to be a mix of everything else. Mm-hmm. And I see this in Mosaic. I mean, we are a bunch of mutts, I call them, because everybody's like interracially married, there's a third culture. And, you know, and to explain something, which I believe it's really important for people to understand, is that, you know, when people ask me about, you know, okay, you're a Middle Eastern pastor and you're an ex-Muslim and you have a congregation, so you have a lot of Muslims? And I go, no, ex-Muslims or Muslims would not come to Mosaic. Mm-hmm. They don't even like me, you know? And then, or they think that my dad's generation or first generation immigrants come to Mosaic. And that's not true at all. See, it's the second generation immigrants. It's the kids who come from traditional families now they're lived in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
They are now transforming the culture. They are actually making a brand new culture where diversity is a whole new, it's normal to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not black and white. It is everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything.
I want to go talk to Howard Brown for a second about this, because there, I did a lot of reading before this, and they're having trouble with words today, and I'm sorry. In the African American community, for years there was this feeling I've read about. I don't know if this is true or not. You can correct me if I'm wrong. That unless the preacher was white, that person did not understand me as an African American, the struggles, the history of my people, the oppression that I faced, and therefore couldn't really relate to me, and I could not relate to them. Is that diminishing now?
You mean that of a
person in the pew saying, if I go to my church, my mm-hmm. African American church, because that person up there in the pulpit has been through what I've been through, what my ancestors have been through. He understands me, or she understands me. Whereas if a white preacher walks up there, they don't get it.
Yeah, I think that's diminished, because I think that mm-hmm. socioeconomically things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
So you have African Americans dealing with the same struggles as Anglo Americans,
mm-hmm.
because they now have similar jobs, living mm-hmm. in similar neighborhoods, mm-hmm. having similar issues with their kids. Money and social ladder climbing changes things.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you have African Americans who have become extremely successful, if you will, as I describe how much money they're making economically,
mm-hmm.
or successful in positions at their jobs. And they actually feel, many of them, that the African American church no longer speaks to their issues.
That's right.
They have feel like they've outgrown the civil rights banter.
That's right.
And they're post-civil rights issues now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking for something different than just that experience. Not that they don't appreciate or recognize what the civil rights church or worship styles, I hate to call it a civil rights worship style, but what civil rights message-based churches have given them, and now they've moved to another place.
So why this lag time of 40-some years between the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Movement, and today we're still sitting here having this conversation? Why wasn't the church in the leadership role of this? Why has it taken so long for this post-civil rights era to reach?
Well, there are two or three different dynamics going on. First of all, I want to completely agree with Howard here. The book that I wrote about a church in Hollywood called Oasis Christian Center is white-led but majority black congregation. And the reason that those people are there, and it is a younger congregation, 27 years old is the average age, mm-hmm. is because these younger blacks see themselves as struggling economically to make it in the Hollywood industry, just like these other white brothers and sisters that are with them in the church.
So their social experience, the secular social
Absolutely.
Experience, is the same. It's not a black-white
That's exactly
difference.
Right. Now, and these blacks all grew up in black churches, but they no longer feel connected to their parents or their grandparents' church, and felt that they needed to strike out of a bubble, they called it a bubble, in order to get involved in the wider world and make friends and be able to get connected and to be able to be a part of the economic world that they were all struggling in together. But in addition to that is the notion that churches are in places that are themselves segregated. Neighborhood segregation is a big part of this story.
Let's come back to that when we come back from the break. Dr. Gerard Amarty with Davidson College. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
And you're listening to an archived version of Charlotte Talks here at 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio. Our support today comes from WFAE members and the UNC Center for Heart and Vascular Care, providing new comprehensive treatments and procedures for all aortic diseases. Information at uncaortic.org. And Diamond Springs, offering bottled water, coffee, and filtration services to the home or office. More information about Diamond Springs at diamondspringscarolinas.com. Marine Corps veteran and combat artist Rob Bates talks about sketching the troop drawdown in Afghanistan. That's when Charlotte Talks, tomorrow morning at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. Our food blog, WFA Eats, explores all things food and culture in the Charlotte region. Check it out at WFAEats.org.
Hi, I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. Each week on Sound Opinions, we explore the world of rock and roll.
And we get some great artists, even enigmatic guys like Trent Reznor, to really bare their souls.
I just kind of come out of a period of inactivity where I was working on just being human again. That was me finding out if I could write sober and finding out if anyone still cared and putting fear in its right place.
That's Fridays at 11 p.m. on Charlotte's NPR news source, WFAE.
We're back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about diversity on Sunday morning in the pews and the churches with the Howard Brown, senior pastor of Christ Central Presbyterian, and Naeem Fazel, pastor and founder of Mosaic Church. Dr. Gerardo Marti is an associate professor of sociology at Davidson College and author of Workshop Across the Racial Divide, Religious Music and the Multiracial Congregation, A Mosaic of Believers, Diversity and Innovation in a Multi-Ethnic Church, and Hollywood Faith, the Son of God, or Holiness, Prosperity, and Ambition in a Los Angeles Church. I'm going to take a lot of phone calls here in a second, but before we do that, we're almost talking about this as though it were in the past, that it was past tense. We just talked about the social experiences of black people and white people in America as civil rights has kicked in and people are finding themselves in the same secular barrel trying to make it in this economic world and in the industries that they've all chosen to work in. So it's no longer that African Americans had to conform to white norms to get ahead, and therefore on Sunday morning they wanted to be among people where they could let their hair down. That's gone?
I would say that is not gone.
Okay.
That is not gone completely. I mean, I'm the pastor of Christ Central Church, a very diverse church, and I sit in there and I miss my African American church experience. I actually feel sometimes uncomfortable and lost in the church that I planted. and that is the reality of being in a diverse church. Mm-hmm. It is always dynamic. It is never static. It is always challenging. When I get up and preach on Sunday mornings, I think, am I a sellout? Look at the amount of white people here. I question who I am. And to just sort of answer your question there, I think that it's not that people no longer feel comfortable. I mean, that people are no longer glad to be in their own churches. It's just that considering all that's gone on in the last 40 or 50 years and being a child myself of parents who went to jail for civil rights and brought me into a diverse world and culture themselves, mm-hmm. I'm trying to find that identity. There is a search for a religious, a spiritual Christian identity, mm-hmm. Where, okay, I know I'm not completely accepted. I know the work that Dr. King started is not finished. And yet I've experienced some of the good fruits of that labor. Mm-hmm. Who am I? Where mm-hmm. do I fit? Mm-hmm. And so there's a sense in which you're looking mm-hmm. for a community where people are all looking at, you know, looking for this new identity, this new church service, this new preaching that addresses things a little broader, but it, you know, lives in the reality that things are still very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There, mm-hmm. we have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, schooling and in a city like Charlotte, mm-hmm. it's still very difficult. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think it's just covered over, you know, with some of the economic success that's happened here in the city because of the banks and all those sorts of things. But you take those away, and we're back.
Does this whole struggle with diversity, both on the people in the pews and obviously on...
as a leader,
you feel
the struggle.
Is this odd to you, coming from the Middle East?
Is this odd to me? The fact is, you know, I don't know if I can actually speak into that, just mm-hmm. because I wasn't a part of this nation,
right.
I wasn't a citizen.
Right.
But I will say this: I think, I think that we live in a culture that I believe understands individual responsibility, mm-hmm. which says I'm my own person. I take responsibility for my life. We value that as Americans. But I think living in Kuwait and being a Pakistani, I think the rest of the world understands what I call corporate responsibility, which means that I'm responsible for myself, but I'm also responsible for what I represent. Mm-hmm. And I think that in the Western world, and especially in the U.S., people want to move out of and go, everything's okay. It wasn't that bad. Black and white issue. Let's just reconcile. Let's just get over it. Let's just view, a black individual on who he is, on his own merit, and let's view this white person on his own merit or her own merit. The problem, though, is that this idea of corporate responsibility, that you actually represent generations, mm-hmm. of race, of other things. You're not just your family. You represent a lot more. I think we need to understand that. I think if we were to understand that we don't just represent ourselves, people view, he represents the African American people here in the U.S. I represent, Pakistanis. And I can never say, hey, don't just judge me based on who I am right now. That isn't it. I think when people understand that, I think we're going to be beginning to understand and take responsibility and be comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But we need to understand that that is in play.
As you listen to Naeem and Howard, they're kind of talking on two sides of the same coin here. Are these themes that you hear echoed in all the research that you've done around the country on these topics? Mm.
Well, at Charlotte, the black-white issues are most prominent. In other parts of the country, we might see other kinds of things. For example, I've talked to many Chinese-American church leaders who are saying that they want to keep their youth. How do we keep our young people when they don't speak Chinese fluently, they don't connect to those services, and they don't necessarily like having a Chinese-only English-speaking service? What do we do? And their answer is either to diversify their congregations through alternative services or their young people leave. Because these are places where people are ethnic. They cannot say that they're not Chinese. They were born from Chinese parents, they are connected to a culture, but they don't want to just be mm-hmm. Chinese. Mm-hmm. And that thing of not wanting to be not just is something that is being carried through among Latinos, among Asians, among other immigrant groups in the United States. Diversity in many ways is being carried by those younger people who are saying, yes, I am ethnic, but I'm not defined only by my ethnicity. And particularly when it comes to a religious commitment, they want to be defined by something more. And for many places, that means I am a dedicated follower of Jesus Christ, or I am a committed Christian, or I love God.
Once again, I want to go to the phone calls, but churches tend to be, as you mentioned, in neighborhoods. They tend to serve neighborhoods, and people of certain neighborhoods tend to go to certain churches. It's been that way for a long time. Maybe it's changing now. I'm looking at Howard Brown's face.
Yeah, I think most of our churches have become regional.
Okay.
I think when people, especially a unique church like Christ Central Church or Mosaic, people will drive to their churches. I mean,
but has,
from Matthews and University.
But has in the past, when things were like that, when mm-hmm. they were more neighborhood, has that held it back? It had to evolve to that, what he's talking about.
Yes, that's changed also. You have two different things. It's sort of like the difference between a specialty boutique, mm-hmm. like a little, like an Asian market where you can mm-hmm. only get certain things there, and the giant's mega stores where you can get everything. Mm-hmm. Mega churches that have many different programs can allow people to come in, and they tend to foster more diversity because there are more ways of getting involved. Mm-hmm. But there are certain churches that are establishing themselves as diversity churches. This is a place that's known for diversity. It's a place where I can come and know that diversity, my value for diversity, mm-hmm. is going to be welcomed. And it's a place where if I'm different, it's not going to matter because people are used to crossing ethnic and racial boundaries, and so it's comfortable here.
Put your headphones on. We'll take some calls from people who've been holding on actually for quite a while in some cases. Frank in Monroe, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Morning.
Great show, guys. I really appreciate what you had to say. I just had a comment that last year I was in a meeting, and an evangelist was talking about a meeting he had down in, here in North Carolina, where the senior pastor wasn't present, and he said he noticed this is a independent, fundamental, King James only kind of Baptist church, which they're not known for diversity. And he said that he noticed there was several interracial couples, there was a number of blacks, there were Asians, and the diversity was quite apparent. And he asked the associate pastor, he said, well, what's the reason for this? And the guy said, well, our pastor is a Cherokee Indian. He didn't put up with discrimination. So I think leadership has a tremendous impact on it, and because the scripture very clearly says there is no difference.
Okay. Any comment on that?
Leadership matters for sure, because they can set the tone.
But as a leader, in some of these churches, the leader is dependent on staying where they are by the vote of the congregation. So there is a danger. There's a risk involved if a leader wants to be diverse and the congregation is not particularly on board with that.
It can,
correct?
But I think that there's another aspect of it mm-hmm. also, which is that part of it is the leader and part of it is how are people connected to each other besides mm-hmm. the church services. Mm-hmm. And the churches that are most successful at diversity have groups, small groups, choir rehearsals, plays, different types of volunteer mm-hmm. programs, because they are making relationships outside. And so in that sense, the leader can set the agenda, mm-hmm. the leader can set a tone, the leader can be an example. But in addition, there have to be places where people actually make friends. And ultimately, diversity works not because we care about diversity, it's because people have friends who right. are of different races and ethnicities.
Thanks for your call. Let's mm-hmm. go to Jeff. Jeff in Charlotte. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Yes, thank you, and I appreciate the show. I mm-hmm. like it a lot, and today's is an example. I called because of the at the beginning of the hour, you spoke about the music in the church and the diversity. Recently, I'd entered a relationship where with a Catholic, I'm Episcopalian, was attending a Presbyterian church myself just because it's very similar. And Catholic, of course, is very similar to Episcopalian. But we were looking for a church we both could enjoy and tried several here in Charlotte and ended up at a new one, which is what I would call New Age Elevation. And recently, we were very, very happy with the message of Elevation. It's about hope. It's a very diverse church. And but recently, we took a family member to show them the church because we were interested in showing what we were proud of, what we liked. And when we went, the whole entire, as they call worship experience, turned out to be a CD release. It was about the music of the band. And in fact, I didn't attend at all for the music and told this family member, look, there's three songs you might not like, but as soon as the songs are over, we'll get to the sermon. There was no sermon, no teaching, no leadership. From my standpoint, I don't go for the music. I go for the lesson. My father used to say, when you go to church, listen, because he may be speaking to you. And although I understand that people attend and enjoy the music, it's not central. The message is central. And just a comment that when we speak about churches focusing on music, I think they're focusing on the wrong thing. And it actually cost this church my attendance.
I have an email here from Brian, who says, Elevation Church, the second fastest growing church in the country, has a diverse congregation, young, old, black, white, etc. They're in the middle of their 12-day revival in which they have brought in men, women, white, and black preachers. They hold a service right down the hall here in Spirit Square every Sunday morning, and it is jam-packed, and they take over the building from the parking lot inside every Sunday morning here. Mm-hmm. This is just one of the locations. How do you explain the phenomenon?
Well, some people believe that mega churches are a part of a movement to diversifying congregations. Mm-hmm. Why can that happen? They have the ability to have more volunteers, the potential of hiring people intentionally from different racial and ethnic backgrounds, and they also have the flexibility to even do things in different sites where they can have pockets of people mm-hmm. in different portions of the city to capture more people. And so megachurches are a particular kind of animal. They have an incredible desire to include as many people as possible, to integrate them in deeply as mm-hmm. they can into the life of the congregation, and that drives them to innovate. How can we reach people who are not yet here?
It's part of the tremendous effort that I think Elevation and others have made.
Jeff, thank you for your call. Let me go to York, South Carolina. Tom, you're on WFAE. Welcome.
Good morning. I'd like to ask folks a couple of things. First thing is, you've basically in this program described diversity as racial, cultural, ethnic. Does your church accept openly gay people of any background? That's the first question. And the second question, a couple of weeks ago, Mike had a program, which probably you didn't hear, but basic theme of what the gentleman said was that faith is a fantasy that people project themselves into. Would you say that what you've been talking about displays that? People go for the music, and if they're not happy with the music, you know, they don't have a faithful experience, and they go somewhere else where they like the music.
Okay, we have about a minute and a half left, so that's a lot of questions to tackle. The gay issue, do either of your churches welcome openly gay people?
I would
say. Is
that
part of diversity?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely part of the diversity conversation. We definitely, they're welcome. I think we have to have a longer conversation. It's not like, it's not just an answer. It's a conversation about what that means. What does accept openly gay? That's a loaded question.
I think it means that they're welcome
to come attend
your
midst.
Of course. And it also deals with judgment.
Judgment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're going to, at least at Mosaic, I would say that they would be judged based on the fact that everyone at Mosaic is a sinner.
Howard.
Yes. I would say yes. Anybody's free to attend our worship services. My deal is that as I have to walk in a journey of dealing with my own sexuality as someone who's heterosexual, mm-hmm. I just ask the same of somebody who is gay. That if my sexuality is up for grabs for improving or getting better mm-hmm. and developing and being pursued by Jesus, that theirs would be too. Mm.
That's a topic for a whole other show, so we'll have to move on because we're out of time. That's Howard Brown, senior pastor at Christ Central Presbyterian. Naeem Fazel is pastor and founder of Mosaic Church. And Dr. Gerardo Marti is associate professor of sociology at Davidson College. Thank you all for being here.